Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
Good afternoon, everyone. I am pleased and honored to be introducing our next speaker, and not just because we share a deep love for and roots in the great state of Kansas. We also share, thank you for the Midwest, thanks, go Kansas. We also share, I know, a Latina from Kansas. Who would have thought, right? But we're everywhere now, aren't we? So we also share, as do so many of us in this audience, family roots in two cultures. Senator Obama knows firsthand that Americans can be immensely proud both of their culture and their country. We are eager to hear today from Senator Obama on his vision for the country, our community, and the potential 9 to 10 million Latino voters needs to have all the knowledge possible so we can make an informed decision this November. Like all of us, Senator Obama has seen the American dream in action, up close and firsthand. Making that American dream a reality for everyone is critically important, and I hope it will be the priority for our country in the years to come. Please join me in welcoming the presumptive Democratic nominee, Senator Barack Obama.
Y esta noche, aburrido la pasaba. Salí a la calle para así matar el tiempo. Cuando de pronto
thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, La Raza. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Thank you. Si se puede. Thank you. I've got to tell you that being here with all of you today feels a little bit like coming home. First of all, because San Diego's weather is like Hawaii's. I don't know how anybody does any work around here. But also because while I stand here as a candidate for President of the United States, I will never forget that the most important experience in my life came when I was doing what many of you do each and every day, working on the ground in our communities to bring about change. As some of you know, after college, I moved to Chicago, and I went to work for a group of churches to help families that had been devastated when the local steel plants closed down. And as some of you know, the southeast side of Chicago is an enormous Latino community. And I knew change in those communities wouldn't come easily. But I also knew it wouldn't come at all if we didn't start bringing people together. So I reached out to community leaders, black, brown, and white, and we formed coalitions on issues ranging from failing schools to illegal dumping to unimmunized children. We set up job training programs for the jobless. We helped prevent students from dropping out of school and taught people to stand up to their government when their government was not standing up for them. That work taught me a fundamental truth that has guided me ever since, that in this country, change does not come from the top down. Change comes from the bottom up. Change doesn't happen just because someone in Washington says it should. Instead, change starts when you teach a child to read, or you register someone to vote, or you help a family buy their first home and then help that family stay in that first home. It starts when you heal broken bodies and troubled spirits, when you organize neighborhoods into coalitions and workers into unions. It starts when you send leaders to Washington who are committed to taking this country in a new direction. And here's the voices of everyone, not just the wealthy and the powerful, but those young people in the barrios, those young people in the inner cities, those young people in rural communities who feel as if they've been left behind. That's the kind of change that the National Council of La Raza is making each and every day. And the theme of this conference is the work of your lives, strengthening America together. It's been the work of this organization for four decades, lifting up families and transforming communities across America. And for that, I honor you, I congratulate you, I thank you, and I wish you another 40 years as extraordinary as your last 40 years. I am absolutely certain that it will come. But I also come before you today at a defining moment for our nation. I'm thinking about an article I read in the newspaper a while back about struggling schools in Los Angeles. And the article told the story of a boy named Gonzalo, who started falling behind in the seventh grade and wasn't getting the support he needed to catch up. When his mother called the school to complain, nothing happened. Nothing changed. All she hit was a bureaucracy. And she said to the newspaper reporter, and I quote, "Maybe the system is not designed for people like us. Maybe the system is not designed for people like us." It was a comment about education, but it reflects a broader feeling that so many people share, that the system just isn't working for them. And they're right. It's not. The system isn't working when a child in a crumbling school graduates without learning to read or doesn't graduate at all. The system's not working when a young person at the top of her class, a young person with so much to offer this country, can't attend a public college or university. The system isn't working when Hispanics are losing their jobs faster than almost anybody else, or working jobs that pay less and come with fewer benefits than almost anybody else. The system isn't working when 12 million people living in hiding and hundreds of thousands are crossing our borders illegally each year, when companies hire undocumented immigrants instead of legal citizens because they want to avoid paying overtime or avoid unionization or exploiting those workers, when communities are terrorized by ICE immigration raids, when nursing mothers are torn from their babies, when children come home from school to find their parents missing, when people are detained without access to legal counsel, when all that's happening, the system just isn't working, and we need to change it. I know how frustrated many of you are right now. Your jobs are hard on a good day, and having a president who cuts your budgets doesn't help. Having a president who's torn gaping holes in the safety net for the people you serve doesn't help. Having a struggling economy, an economy that's left so many people in need of your assistance, that doesn't help either. I know sometimes you get tired. Sometimes you start to lose heart. You start to feel like you're walking that long, hard road alone, like no one sees the sacrifices you make or appreciates the services you provide. But I know how hard you're working. I know the difference you're making in our communities. And I am here today to make you this promise. I will be a president who stands with you and fights for you and walks with you every single step of the way. Because here's something else I know, that when the system isn't working, people who love the country can come together to change it. That's the history of the Hispanic community in America. from fighting to desegregate our schools and our neighborhoods, to organizing farm workers, to standing up for the rights of immigrants. You've reminded us that those words about liberty and equality put to paper over 200 years ago have to mean something. And you've sought to remake the nation in the shape of those ideas. It's a work that reflects the character of this community, in which so many people have come here with so little but had big dreams and big hearts and a thirst to succeed, a willingness to struggle and sacrifice so the next generation doesn't have to, an obligation to everyone in one's family and in one's community. That sense that we're in this thing together, that I am my brother's keeper, that I am my sister's keeper. It's the same reason my own father came here from Kenya so many years ago, in the hope that here in America, you can make it if you try. For centuries, those values of hard work and patriotism and faith and family, the values that have made the Hispanic community so strong, have made America strong too. That's what's at stake this November. This election is nothing less than a test of our allegiance to the American dream. And it's a test of our commitment to all those who are counting on us to keep that dream alive. The people you serve every single day, the 12 million people in the shadows, the communities taking immigration enforcement into their own hands, the neighborhoods seeing rising tensions as citizens are pitted against new immigrants, they're counting on us to stop the hateful rhetoric filling our airwaves, rhetoric that poisons our political discourse and degrades our democracy and has no place in this great nation. They're counting on us to rise above fear and demagoguery, the pettiness and the partisanship, and finally, enact comprehensive immigration reform. Now, I know Senator McCain used to buck his party on immigration by fighting for comprehensive reform, and I admired him for it and joined him in it. But when he was running for his party's nomination, he abandoned that courageous stance and said that he wouldn't even support his own legislation if it came up for a vote. I don't know about you, but I think it's time for a president who won't walk away from something as important as comprehensive reform just because it becomes politically unpopular. That's the commitment I'm making to you. I marched with you in the streets of Chicago. I fought for you in the Senate. And I will make it a top priority in my first year as President of the United States of America. Not just because we need to secure our borders and get control of who comes in to this country, not just because we have to crack down on employers who are abusing undocumented immigrants, but because we have to finally bring those 12 million people out of the shadows and give them a pathway. Yes, they broke the law, and we should not excuse that. We should require them to pay a fine. We should require them to learn English. They should go to the back of the line for citizenship, behind those who came here legally. But we cannot and should not have 12 million people in the shadows. That would turn America into something we're not, something we don't want to be. While we work to strengthen our borders, we need a practical solution for the problem of 12 million people who are here without documentation, many of whom have lived and worked here for years. That's why we need to offer those who are willing to make amends a pathway to citizenship. That way we can reconcile our values as both a nation of immigrants and a nation of laws. We can do both. And that's what I intend to do when I'm President of the United States. But let me say this, Larissa. There's much more to this election than resolving the status of undocumented immigrants. And there's much more that the people all across the country in the Latino community care about. Now, this election is also about the couple I met in North Las Vegas who saved up for decades only to be tricked into buying a home they couldn't afford. It's about the Latino families who were the first ones hurt by an economic downturn and the last ones helped by an economic upturn. They can't afford another 4 years of the Bush economic policies that John McCain is offering, policies that give tax breaks to the biggest corporations and the wealthiest Americans while doing little for struggling families who need help the most. They're counting on us to restore a sense of fairness to our economy by giving tax relief to working families, by supporting our unions, by ending tax breaks for companies that ship jobs overseas and giving them to companies that create jobs right here in the United States. They're counting on us finally coming together to solve this housing crisis that's devastating our communities. I especially want to commend NCLR for your leadership on this issue, for helping so many families avoid fraud and foreclosure. I think it's time you had a president who actually supported your work, and I intend to be that president. This election is also about Latino students who are dropping out of school faster than nearly anyone else. And I notice we've got some extraordinary young people behind me. These are our success stories. But we know that in Latino community, in the African American community, in many rural and impoverished communities, that too many young people, they've given up hope way too early. The children who attend overflowing classes in underfunded schools taught by teachers who aren't getting the support they need, who don't have after-school programs and summer school programs and places to go when they're out of school. They're counting on us to invest in early childhood education, to stop leaving the money behind for No Child Left Behind, to recruit an army of new teachers, to make college affordable for anyone who wants to go, because that's how we'll give every American the skills they need to compete in the global economy and all our children the chance to live their dreams. This election's about working women who can't find affordable child care or after-school programs for their children. Women forced to lose their wages or quit their jobs to care for a newborn baby or an elderly parent. They're counting on us to help them make a living while raising their kids, to fight for equal pay for equal work, and for child care, and for family leave, and for sick leave, because here in America, there should be no second-class citizens in our workplaces. The women who serve in hospitals, who are making the hotel beds, who are serving luncheon right here in this hotel, they should have some rights too. Somebody should be standing up for them too and fighting for them too. That's why I'm running for President of the United States. All those quiet heroines out there, raising 3, 4, 5 kids on a meager salary, but somehow holding it together, making ends meet, because they know that it's going to create a better future for their children and their grandchildren. This election's about the veterans, including so many men and women from the Latino community who've served this country so bravely, but then come home to face new battles with the bureaucracy of the VA or the deplorable conditions in places like Fort Bragg and Walter Reed. We've all walked by a veteran whose home is now a cardboard box on a street corner. It's a disgrace. These American heroes are counting on us to build a 21st century VA to provide the benefits and health care that they've earned, including mental health care, and to ensure that no one who has served this country, that no one who has ever served this country, ever has to sleep on the streets. This election is about the nearly 1 in 3 Hispanics who don't have health care. People for whom one accident, one illness, can lead to financial ruin. It's about the small businesses, the small business owners who are struggling to stay afloat because of rising costs of insuring their employees or insuring themselves. They're counting on us to fix our broken health care system once and for all. Here's Senator McCain's answer to our health care crisis. vote against expanding the Children's Health Insurance Program, a program that provides health care for millions of children in need, and propose a radical plan that would shred our current system of employer-based health care and tax individual workers for their health benefits for the first time in history, a plan that would be financed by a $3.6 trillion tax increase on the middle class, an increase of more than $1,000 per typical family. Under the McCain plan, many Americans could lose their health care that they have and pay more in taxes for the health care that they get. So I have a very different answer when it comes to our health care crisis. I will take on the drug and the insurance companies. We're going to cut costs. We're going to guarantee health insurance for anyone who needs it and make it affordable for anyone who wants it. Everybody, if you need health care, if you're a service worker somewhere who doesn't have health care through your employer, you're going to be able to get health care that is as good as the health care I have as a member of Congress. And if you can't afford it, we will subsidize you. And today, I'm announcing a new aspect of my plan to provide real relief for small business owners who are crushed by rising costs. An idea, by the way, that was championed by my friend Hillary Clinton, who's been leading the way in our battle to ensure every American. It's a plan that would help more employers provide health benefits for their workers, instead of making it harder for them, as Senator McCain would do. We know that small businesses are the engines of economic prosperity in our communities, especially in the Latino community. And under my plan, if you're a small business that wants to provide health care to your employees, we will give you a tax credit to make it affordable. My plan won't impose any new burdens on small businesses. Instead, we'll help them not just create new jobs, but good jobs, jobs with health care, jobs that stay right here in America, the kinds of jobs we need in our communities. That's how we're going to change the system in this country. But NCLR, let me say this. I can't do this alone. So I'm here today to ask you for your help. Make no mistake about it. The Latino community holds this election in its hands. You hold this election in your hands. Some of the closest contests this November are going to be in states like Florida and Colorado and Nevada and New Mexico, states with large Latino populations. And if you have any doubt about whether you can make a difference, just remember how back in 2004, 40,000 registered Latino voters in New Mexico didn't turn out on Election Day. Senator Kerry lost that state by fewer than 6,000 votes. 6,000 votes. Today, in 2008, an estimated 170,000 Latinos in New Mexico aren't registered to vote. I know how powerful this community is. And by the way, so does John McCain. Just think about how powerful you could be on November 4th if you translate your numbers into votes. And I'm not taking a single Latino vote for granted in this campaign. We're meeting with Latino leaders across the country. We're reaching out to Latino organizations to get input on my policy proposals. We've got a nationwide Hispanic media strategy. We're recruiting and training Latino organizers. We're holding Latino voter registration drives across America. And when I'm president, I'll be asking many of you to serve at every level of government, because that's how we're going to change the direction of this country from the ground up, vote by vote, precinct by precinct, state by state. And I hope every single one of you will join us. I need your advice and expertise. I need you to organize people, to knock on doors and make phone calls and register voters. I need you to talk to your friends and your family, your coworkers and your neighbors, and make sure they cast their ballots on Election Day. We walk together on the streets of Chicago. We walked together when I was a civil rights lawyer, registering Hispanic voters and giving Hispanics a greater voice in City Hall. We walked together in those marches for immigration reform. And if we get to the polls this November, then we will walk together through those White House doors. And we are going to shake things up. And we are going to walk into a new future for this country that we all love. That's how we'll make the system work for everyone. For everyone, by living up to the ideals of NCLR, living up to the ideals of this organization, the ideals reflected in your name, La Raza, the people. I'm told that the original phrase was La Raza Cosmica, the cosmic people. That's big. A term big enough to embrace the rich tapestry of cultures and colors and faith that make up the Hispanic community. Big enough to embrace the notion that we are all part of a greater community, that we all have a stake in each other, that I am my brother's keeper, I am my sister's keeper, that we rise and fall together as one people. So to that mother and all those who feel like the system just isn't made for people like them, I say this: that system and this country belongs to every one last of us. Every one of us. Black, white, Latino, Asian, rich, poor, gay, straight, young, old, Native American, new immigrant. This November, we're coming together to turn the page on the failed policies of the past, to bring new energy and new ideas to the challenges that we face. And together, we are not just going to win this election. We will transform this nation. Thank you, and God bless you. I appreciate you all. Thank you very much.
You know, today's luncheon, our theme is honoring service, courage, and leadership. Well, how appropriate that is. The gentleman standing next to me has addressed NCLR as a member of the United States House of Representatives, as a United States Senator, and now as the presumptive Republican nominee for president. Since his earliest days in Congress, John McCain has kept an open door to NCLR and has demonstrated a keen interest in the issues affecting the Latino community, from education to housing to immigration. John McCain has worked with us, with the community, and with his colleagues across the aisle to ensure that policy affecting Latinos in this country is fair, responsible, and inclusive. His Hispanic constituents have appreciated his independence, his frankness, and his willingness to challenge those with whom he disagrees, even within his own party. And while we may not always agree on all the issues, it is no wonder then why he has been a two-time recipient of the prestigious NCLR Capital Award. In short, John McCain was there at a time when few policymakers knew or cared all that much about our community. And he came by that knowledge and interest firsthand by reaching out early and often to us, to other Latino organizations, and most especially to his millions of Latino constituents in his home state of Arizona. And through his words and actions, he has shown his deep respect and admiration for our community. He has supported us in the fight for health care for legal immigrant children, and he believes, as we do, that we have to make the American dream a reality for everyone in this country. And opening that door to the American dream means making progress on a number of issues, including but not limited to immigration. So we are eager to hear of Senator McCain's agenda for America and his vision for the American future. Please join me in giving a warm welcome to our next, your presumptive Republican nominee, Senator John McCain. Thank you.
know, my friend, this is the third organization that Senator Obama and I have appeared before. And a lot of Americans have expressed their frustration with the sound bites, the charges back and forth, the cable monster that has to have a new story every hour, the sound bites and the surrogates and all that. And I asked Senator Obama to have a town hall meeting, to come here with me and share the same stage. The same stage and respond to your questions and comments and your hopes and your dreams and aspirations. And yet he has refused to do that. And so I think Americans deserve better. I think Americans deserve a side-by-side appearance of both of us. And after my remarks that I make to you today, I'd like to take a few more moments of your time after my remarks to you and respond to questions or comments. And I only wish that you and Americans would urge Senator Obama to do the same thing, to stand before you. My friends, times are tough in America. Times are tough. I don't have to tell anybody in this room. And Americans don't want to hear the soundbite. They don't want to hear the misstatement. They don't want to hear the surrogate who may have made a mistake. They want to know about us. They want to know about us, what's in our hearts, and what our proposals are for the future of this country. So I stand before you today with some regret that Senator Obama has not accepted my request, my urgent request, not on behalf of myself, but on part of the American people, because this campaign, I think I could argue very strenuously and cogently, is one of the most important campaigns in the history of America, and it shouldn't depend on sound bites. My friends, there are several issues I want to discuss today, but let me begin with the one that concerns all Americans the most, the economy. Over 400,000 people have lost their jobs since December, and the rate of new job creation has fallen sharply. Every time you pick up the newspaper, you see bad news. Every time you turn on the television, you see bad news. Every time you listen to the radio, you hear bad news. Americans are worried about the security of their current job, and they're worried that they, their kids, and their neighbors may not find good jobs and new opportunities in the future. To make matters worse, gas is over $4 a gallon, and the price of oil has nearly doubled in the last year. The cost of everything, from energy to food, is rising. I have a plan to grow the economy, create more and better jobs, and get America moving again, and we can do it together, my friends. I have a plan to reform government, achieve energy security, and ensure that health care and a quality education are affordable and available for every American. I believe the role of government is to unleash the creativity, ingenuity, and hard work of the American people and to make it easier to create jobs. At its core, the economy isn't the sum of an array of bewildering statistics. It's about where Americans work, how they live, how they pay their bills today and save for tomorrow. It's about small businesses opening their doors, hiring employees, and growing. It's about giving workers the education and training to find a good job and prosper in it. It's about the aspirations of the American people to build a better life for their families, dreams that begin with a job. And how are we going to create good jobs? Let's start with small businesses, which create the majority of all jobs. A recent report says small businesses have created 233,000 jobs so far this year, while, as we all know, other sectors are losing jobs. Small businesses are the job engine of America, and I'll make it easier for them to grow and create more jobs. There are 2 million Latino-owned businesses in America, many of them started by Latinas. The first consideration we should have when debating tax policy is how we can help those companies grow and increase the prosperity of the millions of American families whose economic security depends on their success. It's a terrible mistake to raise taxes during an economic downturn. Increasing the tax burden on Americans impedes job growth, discourages innovation, and obviously makes us all less competitive. The many small business owners who pay individual tax rates, and there are many in this room, would take strong exception to the idea that keeping them low helps no one but the wealthiest Americans. Taking more money from small businesses deprives them of the capital they need to invest and grow and hire. Jobs are the most important thing our economy creates. When you raise taxes in a bad economy, you eliminate jobs. I'm not going to let that happen. I will keep taxes low and cut them where I can. For those of you with children, I'll double the child deduction from $3,500 to $7,000 for every dependent and every family in America. I'll reduce the estate tax to 15% so parents who have spent long years working hard to build a business and provide a decent living to their employees can leave the product of a lifetime of labor and love to their children. La Raza runs one of the largest housing counseling programs in the country that has helped tens of thousands of Latinos. Tens of thousands of Latinos become homeowners with secure mortgages. But millions of Americans have been hurt and badly by the mortgage crisis and falling home values. And many in the Hispanic community have been especially hard hit. I want to help these people who genuinely need assistance in these tough times, not the speculators and lenders who contributed to this mess and didn't follow the basics of good business practice. I am committed to making sure families who want to hold on to their home have a chance to do so. My home plan allows families who need help to repay, who need to help to apply, and they need to apply at their local post office or online for a new, guaranteed, fixed-rate 30-year mortgage that will allow them to remain in their home and raise their family with dignity. To get our economy on track again and create new and better jobs, we need to compete more. Not less, more, not less in the global economy. We can't build walls to foreign competition, and we shouldn't want to. America is the biggest exporter, importer, producer, manufacturer, and innovator in the world. That's why I reject the false virtues of economic isolationism. Any confident, competent country and its government should embrace competition. It makes us stronger, not hide from our competitors and cheat our consumers and workers. We can compete and win as we always have, or we can be left behind. Lowering barriers to trade creates more and better jobs and higher wages. It keeps inflation under control. It makes goods more affordable for low and middle-income consumers. 95% of the world's consumers live outside the United States of America. Our future prosperity depends on opening more of these markets, not closing them. I recently traveled to Colombia and Mexico because I understand it's a Colombian-Mexico vote. I travel there because I understand how vitally important it is to the prosperity and security of our country to strengthen our trade investment, and diplomatic ties to other countries in our hemisphere. I've often traveled over the years to Central and South America, and I have learned our relationships there are as important, if not more important, as any relationship we have in the entire world. It's the reason why I'm an unapologetic supporter of NAFTA, the Central American Free Trade Agreement, and the Colombian Free Trade Agreement. And why I believe a hemispheric free trade agreement is a worthy and necessary goal whose time has come. And while it is surely not my intention to become my opponent's scheduler, I hope Senator Obama soon visits some of the other countries of the Americas for the first time. Were he to do so, I think he, too, would see that stronger economic bonds with our neighbors and the closer friendships they encourage are a great, great benefit in many ways to our country. Colombian President Uribe, a man of courage and vision, has risked much to combat the narco-terrorists of FARC for the sake of all peoples in this hemisphere, including the United States. His recent leadership in freeing Americans held hostage for years should earn him the respect and gratitude of all Americans. And we should emulate his statesmanship by passing the trade agreement Colombia and the United States have negotiated and which both countries would greatly benefit from. I know, and you know, that not all Americans have prospered in the global economy. And for those who, through no fault of their own, have lost their job to foreign competition, I have proposed a comprehensive reform of our unemployment insurance and worker retraining programs. We will use our community colleges to help train workers for specific opportunities in their communities. And for workers of a certain age who have lost a job that won't come back, if they move rapidly to a new job, we'll help make up the difference in wages between their old job and the new one. We have to do that for our older workers. In the global economy, what you learn is what you earn. Today, studies show that half of Hispanics entering high school do not graduate with their class. By the 12th grade, U.S. students in math and science score near the bottom of all industrialized nations. Many parents fear their children won't have the same opportunities they had. That is unacceptable in a country as great as ours is, and we will fix it, my friends. In many schools, particularly where people are struggling the hardest, the situation is dire, and I believe poses the civil rights challenge of our time. We need to shake up failed school bureaucracies with competition, hold schools accountable for results, strengthen math, science, technology, and engineering curriculums, empower parents with choice, remove barriers to qualified instructors, attract and reward superior teachers, and have a fair but sure process to weed out incompetence. I'm a strong believer in charter schools, and so is La Raza. La Raza has helped establish 50 new charter schools, and the results they are producing are incredibly encouraging. Well done, La Raza. Hispanics work hard and sacrifice a lot because their most cherished dreams are the ones they hold for their children. You understand the importance of early childhood development and the active role parents must play in their children's education to make sure they graduate on time and with an excellent opportunity to live happy and prosperous lives. You deserve a greater say in deciding how your children are educated, and I'm committed to making sure you do. Let me address with you one other issue important to all of us. As you know, I and many other colleagues twice attempted to pass comprehensive immigration legislation. To fix our broken borders, ensure respect for the laws of this country, recognize the important economic contribution of immigrant laborers, apprehend those who came here illegally to commit crimes, and deal practically and humanely with those who came here, as my distant ancestors did, to build a better, safer life for their families, without excusing the fact that they came here illegally or granting them privileges before those who have been waiting their turn outside the country. Many Americans didn't believe us when we said we would secure our borders, so we failed in our efforts. I don't want to fail again to achieve comprehensive immigration reform, and we must not. We must prove we have the resources to secure our borders and use them while respecting the dignity and rights of citizens with legal residence and those of legal residence of the United States of America. When we have achieved our border security goal, we must enact and implement the other parts of practical, fair, and necessary immigration policy. We have economic and humanitarian responsibilities as well, and they require no less dedication from us in meeting them. Several years ago, the leading newspaper in my state published an article about putting faces, an article about putting faces on the tragic human costs of illegal immigration. And I'd like to briefly quote from it. Maria Hernandez Perez was number 93. She was almost 2. She had thick brown hair and eyes the color of chocolate. Kelia Velasquez Gonzalez, 16, carried a Bible in her backpack. She was number 109. John Doe, number 143, died with a rosary encircling his neck. His eyes were wide open. We can't let immigrants break our laws with impunity. We can't leave our borders undefended. But these people are God's children who wanted simply to be Americans, and we cannot forget. And we cannot forget the humanity God commands of us as we seek a remedy to this problem. I recently spoke at 2 major Hispanic-Latino conferences, as did Senator Obama. I didn't use those occasions to criticize Senator Obama. I would prefer not to do so today. But he suggested in his speeches there and here that I turn my back on comprehensive reform out of political necessity. I feel I must, as they say, correct the record. At a moment of great difficulty in my campaign, when my critics said it would be political suicide for me to do so, I helped author with Senator Kennedy comprehensive immigration reform and fought for its package not one but twice. I cast a lot of hard votes, as did the other Republicans and Democrats who joined our bipartisan effort. So did Senator Kennedy. I took my lumps for it without complaint. My campaign was written off as a lost cause. I did so not just because I believed it was the right thing to do for Hispanic Americans. It was the right thing to do for all Americans. That's why I did it. Senator Obama declined to cast some of those tough votes. He voted for and even sponsored amendments that were intended to kill the legislation, amendments that Senator Kennedy and I voted against. I never asked for any special privileges from anyone just for having done the right thing. Doing my duty to my country is its own reward. But I do ask for your trust that when I say I remain committed to fair, practical, and comprehensive immigration reform, I mean it. I mean it. And with all due modesty, I think I've earned that trust. Let me close by expressing my respect and gratitude for the contributions of Hispanic Americans to the culture, economy, and security of the country I've served all my adult life. I represent Arizona, where Spanish was spoken before English was. And where the character and prosperity of our state owes a great deal to the many Arizonans of Hispanic descent who live there. And I know this country, which I love more than almost anything, would be the poorer were we deprived of the patriotism, industry, and decency of those millions of Americans whose families came here from other countries in our hemisphere. Latinos are among the hardest working, most productive people in our country. The strength of your religious faith and the strength and closeness of your families are a great force for social stability and individual happiness. In my recent visit to Mexico, I visited the shrine of the Virgin of Guadalupe and was greatly moved by the experience and came to appreciate all the more your deep devotion to the God who created us and loves us all equally. I will honor your contributions to America for as long as I live. We would not be the special country we are without you. I know many of you are Democrats, regrettably, and many of you would usually... And many of you would usually vote for the presidential candidate of that party. I know. I know I must work hard to win your votes, but you've always given me a respectful hearing, and I appreciate it. I know many of you were disappointed and hurt by those who used the debate on immigration last year, not to respectfully debate the issue as most did, but to denigrate the contributions of Hispanics to our great country. I denounced those insults then, and I denounce them today. My friends, you know me. One of my proudest achievements as a politician is to have won 75% of the Hispanic vote in Arizona in my last reelection. I believe, as Janet pointed out, I'm the only member of the Senate to have twice won your Congressional Leadership Award, a distinction I'm very, very proud of. Senator Obama is a fine man and an inspiring public figure. All Americans should be proud of his success. All Americans. I also greatly admire Senator Hillary Clinton and value her friendship. She, too, would have been a very worthy opponent. But I intend to compete for your votes by continuing to earn your trust. When I was in prison in Vietnam, I, like other of my fellow POWs, was offered early release by my captors. Most of us refused because we were bound to our code of conduct, which said those who had been captured the earliest had to be released the soonest. My beloved friend, Everett Alvarez, a brave American of Mexican descent, had been shot down years before I was and had suffered for his country much more and much longer than I had. To leave him behind would have shamed us. When you take this solemn stroll along that wall of black granite on the National Mall, the Vietnam War Memorial, it's hard not to notice the many names such as Rodriguez, Hernandez, and Lopez that so sadly adorn it. And when you visit Iraq and Afghanistan, you will meet some of the thousands of Hispanic Americans who serve there, and many of those who risk their lives to protect the rest of us do not yet possess the rights and privileges of full citizenship in the country they love so well. To love your country, as I discovered in Vietnam, is to love your countrymen. Those men and women are my brothers and sisters, my fellow Americans, an association that means more to me than any other. As a private citizen or as your president, I will never, never do anything to dishonor our obligations to them and their families, or to forget what they and their ancestors have done to make this country the beautiful, bountiful, blessed place that we love. Thank you. Thank you very much, and thank you for your kind welcome.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.